Hey, Keystoners. Welcome back to Keystone State of Mind. It's me, Steph, your tour guide to the dark side of Pennsylvania. So I have a pretty important announcement to start off with. I am going to take the rest of 2020 off of podcasting. So this will be my last show until January. I have a lot going on over the holidays. I have a lot of events scheduled, so I need to take some family time. Also, I'm going to use this time to do some behind-the-scenes stuff and try to come back bigger and better in 2021. Well, hopefully I won't be bigger, but the show, you know, you get what I'm saying. I also just want to say that I know you can hear my heat running in the background, and I apologize for that. But I'm effing freezing. I hate Northern Pennsylvania winters. I want to say a big thank you to Rachel from Illinois, who got a license plate, some KSOM swag, and posted a picture for everyone to see on in the KSOM Keystoners Facebook group. So thanks so much, Rachel. The KSOM Etsy store will stay open through the holidays, even though I'm not putting out any new episodes. I'll still be watching the store and filling any orders. So if you want your KSOM license plate, just go to Etsy and search KSOM or Keystone State of Mind. And of course, the link will be in the show notes. And of course, I'll still be checking the social medias and my email, so feel free to reach out anytime through the holidays. Just search Keystone State of Mind on Facebook. I'm at Keystone State of Mind on Instagram. And of course, you can contact me through the website, ksomthepod.com. That's it for announcements and shout outs, so let's get into the story. But of course, we first have to get into a Keystone State of Mind. As always, I'll be enjoying an ice cold can of Keystone Light while I tell you today's story. On July 21st, 1976, nearly 4,500 members of the Pennsylvania chapter of the American Legion gathered in Philadelphia for their annual three-day convention. Within days of returning home after the convention, the first of many of these Legionnaires fell ill with a mysterious affliction that would end up hospitalizing over 200 and killing 37. It would take more than 6 months to determine what had made these men sick, and this would be the largest medical investigation in American history up to that point. Before I tell you about the outbreak of this mysterious illness, I first want to talk about the American Legion and what they do. My family has been involved with the American Legion for as long as I can remember, and it dawned on me when I was researching this episode that I had no idea when or why it was formed, and I really should. So I want to share that with you. It's actually a really interesting history. In 1919, during World War I, a group of men from the American Expeditionary Forces that were at the time stationed in France were brought together to come up with a plan to help the GIs adjust after this horrible experience that they'd had while fighting in the trenches in World War I. The most notable member of this group was President Teddy Roosevelt's son, Theodore Roosevelt Jr. So T.R. Jr. and his bros got get together and planned out this amazing organization that focused on service not only to veterans, but also to their communities. This organization would serve as a social club for the veterans with locations throughout the U.S., where these guys with shared experiences of being a soldier or a sailor or an airman could come together in a safe space for them. But the American Legion is more than just a social club. The organization as a whole has made some big changes for veterans and their lives after service, as well as huge contributions to communities all over the country. I'm going to quote from an article that I found on history.com. Quote, "The Legion evolved from a group of war-weary veterans of World War I into one of the most influential nonprofit groups in the United States." One of the biggest accomplishments of the American Legion was the introduction of the Servicemen's Readjustment Act, better known as the GI Bill. This bill was written by former Legion commander Harry W. Colmery, and it was signed into law by Franklin Delano Roosevelt in 1944. This bill allows veterans to go to college for free, basically. For every dollar the U.S. government spends on the GI Bill, $7 go back into the United States economy. That's pretty fucking amazing for all of us, and especially the veterans who deserve it the most. And that's not all. In 1946, the Legion granted $50,000 to a struggling nonprofit organization that we now know as the American Heart Association. This grant helped to get the American Heart Association off the ground, and we all know what great work they do today. The Legion lobbied for the creation of the U.S. Veterans Bureau, which we now know as the Veterans Administration, or the VA. And they continue to lobby for funds for the VA every year. In 1982, the Legion presented a check for $1 million to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund to help build the Vietnam Veterans Wall in the U.S. Capitol. This was the largest donation to the project overall. The Legion has donated more than $11 million to child welfare programs. They helped set up a Halloween safety program for children while they're trick-or-treating. And they have donated millions of dollars to scholarship funds for children of veterans. One in particular is the American Legacy Scholarship Fund that serves children of military members that were killed on 9/11. The Legion supports the Boy Scouts of America, as well as the youth baseball programs all over the country. More than 82,000 children play in these Legion-sponsored baseball teams yearly. And more than 50% of all professional baseball players once played on one of the Legion-sponsored teams. I could keep going about the American Legion's accomplishments, but I think you get it. I just wanted to hit the highlights. They fucking rock. And for all these years, I just thought that it was a cool bar with cheap beer. And seriously, cheap beer. Can of Keystone Light is $1.75. You can't beat it. This research has made me really proud to be a member of the American Legion. I've been a member for years. Now, I'm not a veteran, but I have veterans in my family. My grandpa served in Korea during the Korean War, and my brother served in the Navy as a radio man on a submarine. Because I have relatives that are veterans, I am able to be a member of the Women's Auxiliary of the American Legion. And I'm fucking jazzed about that. And we actually just celebrated Veterans Day here in the U.S. last week. So I thought it was a good time to talk about this awesome veterans organization and also send a heartfelt thank you to all the veterans out there. Okay, so now we have some background on the American Legion and the people that we're going to be talking about. And just now I realized that I lost an entire fucking page of my notes. So that's awesome. I'm going to be winging it on some stuff. But I have a good memory, so I should be all right. P.S. A lot of this information came from an episode of Forensic Files. And this is one of my favorite episodes of that show. I love that show. I've seen every episode 1,000 times. But this one stood out to me because it's not murder. It's a medical investigation. And I was super intrigued, and I've really been dying to cover this topic since I started KSOM. Okay, so July 21st, 1976, in Philadelphia. This convention is held every year. But this year was special because it was the American Bicentennial. If you know American history, you know that the Declaration of Independence was signed July 4th, 1776 in Philadelphia at Independence Hall. So to be in Philly during the Bicentennial celebrations had to be so amazing. I'm sure the patriotism and the American spirit was palpable. So for these veterans in an organization that is dedicated to patriotism, must have been such a great experience for these guys. The whole month of July was a celebration in Philadelphia. Parades and bands and street fairs and all kinds of fun shit. But guess what else was going on in July of 1976 in Philadelphia? A garbage strike. The sanitation workers in the city were reducing their work hours due to union contract disputes. Now, this wasn't a full-on strike. They were just limiting their workday. But it still created a shitload of garbage in the streets, especially because there were so many more people in the area for the bicentennial celebrations. There was also a large protest going on. A group of people came together to protest some recent foreign policy changes that the U.S. had implemented. I got that information from the Forensic Files episode, but I really wasn't able to pinpoint what exact foreign policies they were pissed about. I have to assume it stemmed from the Vietnam War in some way. The Vietnam War ended in 75, but I don't know. I think people were just used to protesting the Vietnam War. I'm sure something pissed them off and they were there throwing a fit, whatever. So it was a good time for the Legionnaires. By all accounts, they had fun at their convention. But it wasn't all butterflies and rainbows. There was also smelly trash and picket signs. The convention was held at the Bellevue Stratford Hotel in Center City, Philadelphia. This is a gorgeous hotel and a historic building. Been around since the turn of the century. But of course, there were 4,500 of these legionnaires. They couldn't all stay there. So they stayed in hotels throughout the city and came to the Bellevue Stratford to attend the convention. The convention was a success, and all the legionnaires had a good time. Nothing seemed amiss until a few days later, after they had left and went home to the various areas of Pennsylvania that they came from. On July 27th, 1976, Ray Brennan, a 61-year-old retired U.S. Air Force captain, died from an apparent heart attack. No one could have known at the time that Ray Brennan was the first victim of this mysterious illness. But by August 2nd, just a few days later, hundreds of legionnaires were sick and in the hospital, and 22 were dead. The first person to really connect all of this information was Dr. Ernest Campbell. He was a physician from Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania, and three of his patients died within a week of returning from the convention. This astute doctor immediately contacted the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, Georgia, to let them know that something was wrong here in PA. The American Legion posts also quickly realized something was wrong when so many of their members started getting sick. And these were only Legion members that had attended the convention in Philadelphia. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention launched a huge investigation. This is what these CDC scientists live for. I don't know if you guys noticed, I'm sure you have by now, but I have a little bit of a lisp. So trying to say CDC scientists after a few beers, kind of difficult. The first thing that these scientists did was start compiling the autopsy results and tissue samples from the dead legionnaires. What they determined was that these men had died from an atypical pneumonia. All of them had damage to their lungs. The lungs resembled like a Brillo pad. When the tissue samples were examined under a microscope, none of these scientists could pinpoint what was causing it. They actually injected a guinea pig with liver tissue from an infected victim who died to try to imitate this condition. The guinea pig died. Actually, I don't know if they killed the guinea pig or if it died of this disease. I'm not 100% on that. But even in the guinea pig's tissue samples, they were not able to find anything. The CDC scientists also interviewed all of the legionnaires that had been at the convention, whether they were sick or not, to try and find out what they had in common. Did they eat the same food? Did they stay in the same room? Did they drink the same drinks? What was the common denominator here? And what they found was that there really wasn't any, except for the convention at the Bellevue Stratford. They even interviewed employees at the hotel, and none of the employees were sick. they tested the food and thoroughly investigated the kitchen at this hotel, and nothing was found. The CDC started to think maybe it was the garbage strike. Was there something being emitted from this trash, some kind of bacteria or virus being emitted from the trash all over the roads that caused this illness? But then it really would have affected everybody in Philadelphia. And the only people that were sick were the Legionnaires. Investigators began thinking maybe it was that group of protesters. Was it some kind of bioterrorism? But once again, how could it only affect the Legionnaires? There was actually an anonymous letter sent to Dr. Sunderman of the University of Connecticut that said the Legionnaires were intentionally poisoned. Dr. Sunderman found that all of the tissue samples contain nickel. So they're thinking, okay, maybe these guys were poisoned with nickel somehow. But it was quickly determined that the nickel actually came off of the scalpels that were being used during autopsy. So this letter was a hoax. And why would a hoaxer send a letter to the University of Connecticut? That's nowhere near Philadelphia. Send it to Penn State or something. What a fucking dummy. Whatever. It was a hoax. But that just goes to show how widespread the media coverage on this was. This was nationwide news. And the CDC had a lot of pressure to figure out what the fuck was going on. Now, thankfully, after this initial outbreak, after the first few weeks of this illness that the Legionnaires were suffering, it subsided. No one else was getting sick, and there were no more deaths after the first couple of weeks. It wasn't some kind of crazy outbreak like a worldwide pandemic. Wink, wink, irony. There were lots of unanswered questions, but the CDC investigators were able to come up with some conclusive findings. Everyone that was afflicted was either over 50, a smoker, or had underlying conditions, or some combination of those three things. The employees who worked at the Bellevue Stratford, they were younger and healthier people. So that's a start. Okay, this condition tends to affect older people who may be smokers or have underlying conditions. Once again, wink, wink, irony. I'm not sure if irony is the right term here, but you guys know what I'm getting at, I'm sure. Another thing that the investigators were able to determine was that the Bellevue Stratford was having some problems with their air conditioning system at the time. It took a little while, but eventually the air conditioning units that were on the roof of this hotel were inspected, and once again, nothing was found. One thing that I found quite amusing in this story was that the investigators looked into something called super gonorrhea. Super gonorrhea. I can only imagine that regular gonorrhea is awful. But what the fuck is super gonorrhea? I didn't even know that was a thing. Not to mention, these guys are old. Where the fuck are they getting gonorrhea? As a matter of fact, the Bellevue Stratford Hotel beefed up their security to make sure that sex workers weren't hanging around during the convention. I can't imagine these guys are getting a lot of ass, but not trying to be a dick. I'm just saying. Okay, kids. Super gonorrhea is just one more reason for you not to have unprotected sex. Spoiler alert, this mysterious illness was not super gonorrhea. The CDC was able to determine that this illness was airborne, but was not able to be communicated from person to person. And they knew this because there were multiple people who shared the same room with someone that was sick or died that did not have any symptoms themselves. So whatever it is, it's in the air, but it's not able to be spread from one person to another. Hence, masks were not necessary. Wink, wink, irony. Months had gone by with no new developments, and the CDC was working on this every day. And nobody can figure out what the fuck is going on. By now, it's Christmas time. It's December 1976. And the head of the investigation, Dr. Joseph McCade of the CDC, is at a Christmas party. He's taken some time off for Christmas with his family, and he's at this Christmas party. And all anybody wants to talk about is what happened to the Legionnaires. Why can't you figure it out? What the fuck are you guys doing? How can it be this hard? He was so disheartened after this Christmas party where everybody's grilling him about this mysterious illness that he actually canceled his vacation plans with his family for Christmas and went back to the lab. Dr. McCade went back to square one. He began examining samples that he had looked at so many times. He was thinking to himself that he had to have been missing something. There's got to be something here that I'm just not seeing. And in that guinea pig sample, remember earlier when we talked about the liver cells being injected into the guinea pig? He re-examined those samples. And he saw something that initially he thought was some kind of contamination. It was an anomaly. He had earlier dismissed it as contamination on the sample. But this time he decided to think of it as maybe it's not contamination. Maybe this is it. And he was right. Further investigation determined that this anomaly was not contamination. It was actually a brand new bacterium never seen before under a microscope. So Dr. McCade got to name it. And he decided to name it after the people that it affected. Legionella pneumophila. Legionella, after the legionnaires that were afflicted. And pneumophila, after the lung symptoms that it caused. I just now realized that I've been calling this guy Dr. McCade the whole time, and his name's actually Dr. McDade with a D. McDade. My handwriting sucks. I apologize. It's Dr. Joseph McDade. Dr. McDade and his team also found a cure. It's a bacteria, after all, so an antibiotic can cure it. But a specific antibiotic called erythromycin. Okay, cool. It's got a name. It's got a cure. But where did it come from? They looked everywhere. Where did this bacteria come from? After more studies and investigation, it was found that the Legionella bacteria thrives in warm, stagnant water. Immediately, investigators go back to that air conditioning issue that the Bellevue Stratford Hotel was having. Now, it took them a while to test the water in the air conditioning system. And by that time, the cooling system was back up and running. So there wasn't stagnant water anymore. This bacteria relies on stagnant, warm water. So they were able to determine, yeah, that's where it came from. The water in the air conditioning unit sat long enough to collect this bacteria. And then when it got back up and running, it spread it into the air. But not into the central air inside the hotel that's filtered. This was the exhaust. The exhaust sent these water molecules into the air where they evaporated. But the bacteria fell to the sidewalk, outside. That's why it was never an issue inside the hotel. That's why the employees were not affected. The people affected were the ones that were hanging out on the sidewalk, chit-chatting with their buddies. The ones that were over 50, the ones that were smokers, the ones that had underlying conditions. And where do you get a congregation of older people who smoke and might have underlying conditions? At an American Legion convention. So the mystery was solved, and now there's a cure for this illness. Out of the 37 people who died, two of them were not actually Legionnaires. One was a person who worked across the street in an office building who must have picked up the bacteria walking down the sidewalk. And the other was a bus driver who drove a busload of Legionnaires to the convention. Investigators were also able to definitively say that two outbreaks of unknown origin were actually Legionellis, and one was in Minnesota in 1957, and one was in Washington, D.C. in 1965. So this investigation not only clarified what happened in Philadelphia in 1976, but it also clarified these other two unknown outbreaks. This infection has now become known as Legionnaire's disease, but it is absolutely treatable. So today I not only thank our wonderful veterans, but also our brilliant scientists at the CDC. Okay, guys, I hope the rest of 2020 doesn't suck near as bad as it has up to this point. I hope you guys have awesome holidays, spend time with your family, eat delicious food. Happy Thanksgiving, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, and everything in between. I'll be back in January 2021. But in the meantime, stay keystoned, my friends.